This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday, the 6th of December, 2013. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 6th of December 2013, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Shirley Parrell.
Hello.
Mel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Let's have a look at what's on, shall we? Well, there's quite a lot of concerts on, because it's this time of year. Friday, December the 13th, Lord Lieutenant's Christmas Concert at Winchester Cathedral, 7 p.m. Christmas carols and readings presented by Alan Titchmarsh, Dame Kirry to Kanawha Cathedral Choir. Tickets £45, £35, £25, £15 from Cathedral Box Office 01962 857 275. Or there's a website, www.winchester-cathedral.org.uk. Also, Friday, December the 13th, Bright Angels, St. Lawrence's Church in the Square, Winchester, 7:30 p.m. Free concert with music of old village bands and choirs, retiring collection in aid of Winchester Basics Bank and the Bowers Project. Also, Friday, December the 13th, 9 lessons and carols at Milner Hall, St. Peter Street, Winchester. And that's at 7 p.m. There's poetry, Tay's songs, live music, Christmas bookstall in aid of the Olive Branch, which is Christian counselling. £5 entry on door. 01962 773 142 for more details. And again, on Friday, December the 13th, a lot of choice here, the Bowers Carol Service at the Old Tithe Barn, Hill Farm, Sutton Scotney. And that's at 7 p.m. again. The Bowers Project's annual carol service with Andover Salvation Army Band. Mince pies and mulled wine served afterwards. Free entry. More details, 01962 761 749. Saturday, December the 14th, the Wainfleet Singers and Friends at Brooks Centre Carol. No, it's a carol concert, obviously. Brooks Centre, Winchester, 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon. Carols and Christmas music in aid of leukemia and lymphoma research. More details, 01962 869 352. Also, Saturday, December the 14th, Cathedral Chamber Choir concert at 1 p.m. Free entry, retiring collection. And again, Saturday, December the 14th, Sing Noel, seasonal music, Romsey Choral Society at the Winchester Discovery Centre, Jury Street, 7:30 p.m., conductor Jamie Hall. Concert of new and traditional music. Carols for audience too. £10. Unreserved seats. More details. 01962 873 603. On Wednesday, Thursday and Saturday, December the 18th, 19th and 21st, there are Cathedral Carol Services at Winchester Cathedral, 6:30 p.m. The first service is ticketed with a limited number of free tickets. The remaining two are not ticketed and all are welcome. There's other stuff here. There's Wednesday to Saturday, December the 11th to the 14th, Robin Hood and the Babes in the Wood at Week Community Centre, Taplands Road, Winchester, 7 p.m. A pantomime for all the family, created and performed by members of North Winchester Community Church and students from University of Winchester. Wednesday, all seats a pound. Thursday to Saturday, £6 and £4. Tickets from a mobile number 07708 562 650. There's a Christmas quiz on Saturday, December the 14th. That's at the City Museum, the Square, Winchester. And then there's the theatres are doing, the Theatre Royal is doing Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Wednesday, December the 11th to Sunday, January the 5th, various times. More details, 01962 840 440. The Chesil Theatre is doing Present Laughter, Saturday, December the 7th to Saturday, December the 14th at 7:45 p.m. There's no performance on the Sunday. There is a matinee on December the 14th at 2:30 p.m. It's by Noel Coward, and you can get more details from 07527 471 539, or go to the Chesil Theatre website, which is down as www.cheseltheatre.org.uk. Mayflower Theatre, there's Thriller Live to Saturday, December the 7th onwards. That's Monday to Friday, 7:30 p.m. Saturday, 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. And also on Saturday, December the 14th, so Sunday, January the 12th, it's the Pantomime, which this year is Robinson Crusoe and the Caribbean Pirates. For the box office, it's 023-8071-1811. And also at the Nuffield on Thursday, December the 5th to January the 12th, there's the Nutcracker at various times. And the box office number for that is 023-8067-1771. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 6th of December at 7:54 a.m. and begins at 4 p.m. On Wednesday the 11th of December, it ends at 8 a.m. and begins at 3:59 p.m. Now, if you know of someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick, there is a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826, and she will then send you a replacement memory stick. Please replace the card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player, before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged, as several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. We will be changing over from red memory sticks to green in the near future, so do not be surprised by receiving a different coloured stick. We've got more green sticks than red. And we've got three headline stories this week. Heroes drag man from burning car, gang went on robbing spree, and public must have say on station development. So can we have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley?
Heroes drag man from burning car. Four heroes risked their lives to rescue a man trapped in a burning car, dragging him clear seconds before the vehicle was engulfed in flames. The men stopped to help after a head-on crash on a country lane near Winchester. One driver had got out of his car, but the other was trapped as fire spread towards him. He was close to being burned alive before the four rescuers stepped in. Tony Hyam, 65, was one of the passers-by. He told the Hampshire Chronicle, "One car was starting to burn and was right alongside, 3 or 4 feet away. The other car, in which a gentleman was trapped by his legs, caught in the pedals. We tried to push the car from the fire, but it was too damaged, and we could not open the driver's door. The near side was completely up against the bank. We could hear the burning, and I could feel my right buttock getting a bit hot. The driver was semi-conscious. He wasn't screaming, but he was making no effort to get out of the car. It was going to have to be brute force. We finally got the rear passenger door open, and the gentleman got in, and I got in, and pulled the driver's seat back, and we pulled him with brute force through the rear passenger door. All the time, the heat was getting more intense. There were bangs going off, the tyres exploding. We were all very conscious. There was petrol in the tank about to go up. But we were focused on getting this chap out. It seemed to take forever, but it was probably only about 5 to 10 minutes. The car was engulfed in flames as we got him out. It was pretty warm. You could feel the heat. We tried to get him as far away from the car as possible. We thought the petrol tank would explode. It didn't, but the flames were 20 feet high. The trees were on fire. Mr. Hyam denied he was hero. Anybody would have done the same. Nobody was going to walk away from that. Three others did a fantastic job. He added, "It was like a game of chess, working out what to do next. If we can't open the door or the fire takes hold, there might have come a moment when we could do no more, but we got him out." Mr. Higham, a retired commander with 38 years' service in the Royal Navy, says he has no idea of the identity of the other three rescuers. He added, "The police officer afterwards was very grateful." At one stage in his naval career, Mr. Higham of Church Lane, Hambledon, was responsible for Royal Navy firefighting. The drama happened on Belmore Lane, Ossulbury, at around 6:30 p.m. last Sunday, when a Skoda Octavia and a Ford collided. The car was well alight when we got there. Two fire crews attended from Winchester, one of them retained. One of the vehicles was completely destroyed. Firefighters, with two hose reels and wearing breathing apparatus, extinguished the fire by about 7:20 p.m.
Let's have the second story behind the front page headline news. Noel, please.
Yes, the headline is, "Gang went on a bank robbing spree. Men in balaclavas attacked security guards." A criminal gang robbed guards delivering cash to a string of banks, including one in Chandler's Ford, a court heard. Three men in balaclavas attacked security guards outside HSBC Bank in Chandler's Ford on November the 24th, 2011, and escaped with £25,000 in cash. The empty stolen cash box was later found in an abandoned getaway car, a silver Volvo, parked in a nearby street. Jacqueline Smith, 36, of Mitcham, Surrey, and Caston Francis, 52, of Crystal Palace, London, both deny a conspiracy to rob charge between May 2011 and April 2012. Mark Aldred, prosecuting, said, "This case is about robbery, or more precisely, a series of robberies, in which cash-in-transit guards were confronted by masked men." The jury was told three co-accused had already pleaded guilty and are waiting to be sentenced. They were Leroy Hall, Leon McKenzie and Clifford Griffiths. Mr. Aldred said Smith and Francis were party to an agreement to rob guards delivering cash. He described Hall as the general of the criminal gang. Winchester Crown Court heard on Tuesday the London-based gang targeted banks in Chandler's Ford, Reading, Bath and Gloucester. The haul included £125,000 from Gloucester. The court heard Hall and McKenzie were released from jail in March 2011 for their part in a series of raids on the same banks between 2005 and 2007, including HSBC and Chandler's Ford. Mr. Aldred said the current gang of robbers followed the same blueprint, even abandoning getaway cars in the same roads, but different foot soldiers were involved. The jury heard automatic number plate recognition and mobile phone records showed Francis was an active part of the criminal gang, although not involved in all of the robberies. His car was caught on CCTV travelling in convoy with one of the getaway cars on reconnaissance days before robberies and heading down the M3 to Chandler's Ford on the day of the robbery. Smith was arrested with Hall, McKenzie and Griffiths when police, who were following the gang, swooped before a raid in Gloucester. The court heard Smith was driving a car parked around the corner from the bank with three empty seats. Mr. Aldridge said Griffiths was the father of her baby and they were partners. The jury heard Francis answered "no comment" in police interviews, while Smith claimed to know nothing about the attempted robbery, claiming that she had been kept in the dark. The trial continues.
And the third story, please, Jane.
This one is headed "Public Must Have Say on Station Development. New homes, leisure, office and cultural use identified." The Winchester public must be involved at the early stages of a potentially massive redevelopment of the railway area, the town forum heard. City councillors were discussing a consultant's report which said it was feasible to revamp the neighbourhood from Gladstone Street to Andover Road to create a new gateway for the city. It would also boost the local economy and help the council maximise its assets. Ideas included 250 homes, leisure, office and cultural uses. The report by consultants Tibbles says offices of up to 7 stories high could be built on Andover Road. The town forum last Wednesday agreed to hold a meeting in January for stakeholders such as the landowners and the public to discuss general principles for the scheme. The city and county councils, as well as Network Rail, are the main landowners. Councillor Janet Berry said, "Anybody who lives there and travels through there is a stakeholder. It is not just big organisations there. People often come up with fantastic ideas if they are given an opportunity. They can improve designs because they know an area so well. We are lucky in Winchester that we have a community that wants to be involved." Councillor Chris Pine said, "We must not go too quickly into decision mode. We have to have a lot of exploration first." Councillor Martin Todd said it was important to reassure residents on Andover Road that their homes were not in jeopardy of demolition. He said the Conservative-controlled administration had form on the issue, referring to the recent example of people living in Stanmore who discovered their homes were earmarked for demolition in a council scheme. Michael Carden of the City of Winchester Trust said any strategy will need a strong design vision to ensure that the scheme not only provides a fitting gateway to Winchester, but also secures the support of the community who have been so vocal in their opinions of quality. Architect David Ash told the forum, "Very few people want to support the status quo. Doing a public consultation on the back of a general view that something must be done is an opportunity to bring in lots of ideas." The senior city planning officer said the planners and estates departments needed guidance on what people wanted to see in the area. "If we try to get the biggest return, then it will be 2 supermarkets and lots of housing, which may not be what the city wants," he said. The Tibbles report identifies the cattle market site, the site of Sunday car boot sales, as having the most development potential. Suggested options include a headquarter offices, flats and houses, open spaces and cafes. Andover Road could see managed workspace, student housing and additional station car parking. Gladstone Street could see a new 310-space multi-storey car park, convenience store, cafe and homes. It identifies several opportunities, including creating a gateway on Andover Road and a high-quality station forecourt. Active frontages on Andover Road, Station Hill, Worthy Lane, Gladstone Street and Station Road, and improving junctions for better pedestrian movement. And the article is accompanied by a map indicating the areas around the station with potential for development.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now, just to reinforce the lighting up times, which end on Friday the 6th of December at 7:54 a.m. and begin at 4 p.m. and on Wednesday the 11th of December end at 8 a.m. and begin at 3:59 p.m. And now we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person and editorial comment. I'll start with the death notices. Atchley, Martin Atchley, suddenly at St Cross Grange, Winchester, aged 82. Baldwin, Shirley Dorothy Baldwin, aged 83. Burgess, Peter Frederick Burgess, aged 81. Colin Collison, Phyllis Irene née Kitley Collison, aged 87. Cousins, David Charles Cousins, peacefully at home, aged 72. Crutchfield, Malcolm Crutchfield, peacefully at home, aged 63. Dickinson, Doreen Dickinson, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 86. Evans, John Fawcett Ogilvie Evans, aged 84, peacefully at home. French, Avril Christine French, aged 70. Larkin, Philip Phil Buzz Larkin, aged 44. Michener, Ray Michener, aged 73. Reynolds, Spencer James Reynolds, peacefully at Rowan's Hospice, aged 55. Ricketts, Ernest Ted Ricketts, peacefully in hospital, aged 82. Twig, Roger Stanley Twig, peacefully in hospital, aged 70. And finally, Witten, Derek Witten, at St. Peter's Hospice, Bristol. And now it's time for Christian comment, read by Shirley.
And this is headed Through Music and Kindness, Heaven Draws Near. And it's written by Canon Rowley Ream. You don't have to be a churchgoer to love the music of John Taverner. The nation took him to its heart when his song for Athene was used as Princess Diana of Wales' coffin left Westminster Abbey on that September day in 1997. A more heavenly sound would be hard to imagine. Sir John died on November the 12th, and Winchester Cathedral was given the honour of hosting his funeral, even though he came from a different Christian tradition. The service may have been the first Greek Orthodox service in the cathedral's long history. An Orthodox funeral service is sung throughout. The sublime music takes you to the courts of heaven, but doesn't leave the earth behind. There are stern reminders in the texts that death is real and present, how it snatches away loved ones and puts an end to friendship. The words and music hold heaven and earth together. One of the most moving moments is when the whole congregation is invited to come and say a final farewell to the coffin. The traditional gesture is a kiss, to kiss the religious symbols on top of the coffin itself, and sometimes, though not in this case, even the forehead of the deceased. As the family came up early and stood by the coffin, everyone else had the opportunity to show them love and kindness. Hearing the soaring music while seeing the sorrowful comforted again showed what it was like for heaven and earth to meet, and this meeting happened in a different way once the service was over. A funeral service lasting over 2 hours is quite a marathon. Afterwards, the family came out looking weary and hungry, facing further travel with the coffin. But before they set out again, another gesture gave hint of heaven. Meat pies and bottled water were brought out to feed them before they set off, supplied from the Christmas market outside. So while beautiful music can certainly lift our spirits, and will do at many carol services over the coming weeks, one of the best ways in which heaven and earth can be brought closer together is through simple acts of kindness. Hugging the sorrowful and feeding the hungry make things small and lowly speak of eternal glory. It's no accident that the scene we meet at Christmas is of a lowly child being hugged by his mother, and shepherds approaching in warm devotion. In their kindness, heaven draws near.
We've 11 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Alan Darlington writes, Rotary thanks for Typhoon Appeal. Sir, I would like to thank all those who gave so generously to Winchester Rotary Club's collections for shelter boxes for people affected by the typhoon that hit the Philippines recently. A collection at the Sainsbury's at Badger Farm raised just under £900. In addition, readers donated on our Just Giving website, with one anonymous reader giving £100. Winchester University's recently formed Rotaract Club also held a separate collection. These donations will allow us to send 2 shelter boxes. Members, friends and relatives have also given generously, and at the latest count we have raised enough for 13 shelter boxes, a superb response to the disaster, especially as it comes so soon after the Children in Need appeal. Alan Darlington, Winchester Rotary Club.
And this letter from Catherine Morris is headed More Transparency on Sticking Point. Sir, Amanda Ford, head of sport at Winchester City Council, and Andy Hickman, head of project New Leisure Centre, have stated that if there were sufficient finance and land available at Bar End, they would seriously consider a new leisure facility with a 50-metre pool at Bar End. It is not clear to the public what Tesco's stance is with regard to the land that they own, and it would be useful if both Tesco and the City Council were transparent on this sticking point. It appears Tesco cannot build on or sell this land for housing. Surely it would be in their interest to make the City Council an offer whereby both parties benefit. It is crucial that Tesco is perceived in a favourable light by the public, and this is a big opportunity for them to gain public support. Several large supermarkets claim to support sport and a healthy lifestyle. This is Tesco's opportunity to demonstrate that. And that was from Catherine Morris, Compton, Winchester.
John Butterworth writes, and it's headed, Why the Rush to Rebuild River Park? Sir, with regard to the need for greater openness and transparency concerning the proposed River Park rebuild, I would like to know why the rush to rebuild at all. A rumour is circulating that the council made a deal with the current management of River Park to rebuild it at a cost to local taxpayers of many millions. Funnily enough, it seems that the people in question are a building company. Is this true? And if so, why have we not been told? I would contend that in order to maintain the reputation of open governance in Winchester, it is imperative that this concern be resolved. John Butterworth, Nuns Walk, Hyde, Winchester.
Reverse Parchment Street traffic flow, says Anne Bristow. Sir, is the Parchment Street direction of traffic flow still an experiment? During the recent census of traffic movements in the city, what consideration was taken regarding the traffic going to and from the recreation centre? All traffic using the centre and returning to the north, south or west is unnecessarily thrown into the one-way system. By reversing the Parchment Street traffic flow, congestion around the lower part of Winchester city centre would be reduced. When will common sense prevail? Perhaps there is someone of significance living in the street. Anne Bristow, Keats Close, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And this letter from Jackie Porter is No Excuse for Poor Information. Sir, after campaigning long and hard for the M3 Junction 9 improvements, I am delighted the work seems to be going well. The night working is really appreciated. But the public information is really very poor for drivers on the road in the evenings. Going to an event in the south of the county on Friday, the yellow-printed signs told me the junction would be closed from 10 p.m. On my return, the huge signs over the motorway told nothing of the closure of the junction after 10 p.m. Someone must plan what these signs say, though, in my experience, and the closure information is not local, so rarely relevant. So, I asked the Highways Agency staff who decide these things, why don't you tell drivers on the road what the current position is? As you approach Junction 10, is it better to come off and go round a significant diversion, or stay on and find yourself having to travel to Basingstoke because the junction is closed? The gantry sign said A34 closed after M4, but absolutely nothing about the next junction. We couldn't take the chance and pulled off at Junction 10, but a driver unaware of the planned closures would be forced to go to Basingstoke and drive back. There is no excuse for poor information. My message to the Highways Agency is employ the overhead gantry signs usefully, that's what they are for, and tell us at least one junction ahead. These gantries, colloquially called Toys for the Boys, on the M3, cost about £400,000 each to install. Please display local information More than once, preferably. That way we'll all avoid the additional carbon emissions and the frustration of having to drive back to the town we want to visit. And that, accompanied by a photo of the crowded road with a gantry over it with the messages, was from Jackie Porter, County Councillor, Itchen Valley Division, Main Road, Itchen Abbas.
This letter from Mike Biden is headed, City Could Follow Dutch Example. Sir, my wife and I often visit Holland, where most people live in towns, the hearts of which, like Winchester, are old and picturesque. Their response to the motor car was to exclude it as far as possible and redesign their streets to ensure that those on foot or a bicycle have equal priority. It is not generally possible to transit the historic cores of their towns by car. Firstly, their towns have been given a complete peripheral ring road and the town divided into sectors. A vehicle may access almost any place within town for deliveries and parking, but only get from one sector to another via the ring road. Each sector is essentially a complex cul-de-sac. Secondly, they pioneered shared surface streets designed to give equal priority to pedestrians, bikes, and motor vehicles. They are used in residential and commercial centres where everyone is travelling at very low speeds and vehicles are at the start or end of their journeys. Together, these two measures preserve a charming, attractive, and safe environment. What they do not have is shared surfaces on arterial roads with through traffic. The two are simply incompatible and were never intended to work together. Given where we are with Barton Farm, the Andover Road should be retained and the centre of the new development a shared surface. To create a new arterial route through a new residential and commercial development and then design the roads as shared surfaces is simply madness. It was a failure of planning of first magnitude that the proposal for 2,000 homes at Barton Farm was not accompanied by a strategic review of traffic management for Winchester as a whole, and a proposal for effective peripheral routes around the city centre. We should not compound the error now. The developer should not be allowed to have it both ways. Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, Winchester.
And here's a thank you letter from our own chairman, John Richards, who you'll hear reading on the Christmas magazine when you receive it. Sir, each month, every branch of Waitrose donates £1,000 in total to three local good causes. In September, Winchester Talking Newspaper, WTN, was one of the chosen causes nominated by the Waitrose store in Winchester. WTN's share of September's donations was £460. May I, through your letters page, please express our heartfelt thanks to Winchester Waitrose and, of course, to the shoppers who chose to put their green tokens into our plastic box in the store. We need funds to carry out our work in providing recorded extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle each week to 100 or so blind or visually impaired listeners in Winchester and surrounding areas. Our recordings help our listeners keep in touch with local news, something which sighted people take for granted. We also record a monthly magazine, which is a miscellany of items on a wide variety of topics. All our recordings are available free of charge to any blind or sight-impaired person. So I end this letter of thanks with an appeal. If any of your readers know of anybody who is blind or partially sighted and who would like to receive our recordings, I would ask them to ring our studio telephone, which is 01962 808 085. That's 01962 808 085, leaving a message if necessary. John Richards, Chairman, Winchester and District Talking Newspaper Association, Chesil House, Chesil Street, Winchester.
This letter is from Richard Stobart and is headed, Vital to Manage Our Population. Sir, The advice, don't panic about the population explosion in the UK, because the increase will stop in the next century, may be statistically sound, but another calculation merits the full Corporal Jones response. Our successors will run out of cool, clear water well before they number 90 million. The most useful parts of Professor Hans Rosling's recent presentation on BBC Two were those that revealed the long lead times needed to reduce the rate of increase, because we are living longer and our practice of importing a preponderance of people of childbearing age allied to an increase in the birth rate. Turning these trends around soon enough to avoid much of the misery to come would involve steps so unpleasant that no UK government will attempt them. One essential step is to manage migration with efficient border controls, but this would entail leaving the EU because the other members are wedded to freedom to travel and work. The other essential is to reduce families to one or at most two children. This is not impossible. The common practice of drinking and driving became unacceptable with only 20 years. Fashion is very powerful. Racist jokes are no longer acceptable. The government could start by stopping the subsidy of child benefit that encourages young people to believe they can afford a child. Unaffordable children destroy wealth and are the commonest cause of deprivation and poverty. No child should leave school without being aware of the cost of a new life. And that was from Richard Stobart, Bournefields, Twyford.
And this one from James Anderson, and it's headed, Bribing Me with My Own Money. Sir, oh dear, is Martin Heath's wind farm co-op descending into make-believe? Letters of November 21st. So 65% nuclear is a dangerous and impractical fantasy, is it? Tell that to the French, with 75% nuclear, of which 10% is exported, some to the UK. And from the digest of UK energy statistics, some 20% of our electricity last year was already nuclear. The farm is part financed by EDF, who will remain sole owner. The co-op is to be a deposit taker, paying interest. EDF are to pay a higher rate to the co-op to cover management charges. Additionally, EDF propose to pay up to £140,000 each year to local projects. That would explain why my electricity bill is rocketing. As Martin Heath says, for French EDF, it is a dream come true. I am not prepared to be bribed with my own money and do not want profit on the back of others' fuel poverty. Thank you. James Anderson, Wright's Close, South Wanston.
And in this letter, Dr. Gavin Bullock actually answers something I'd been wondering about. Sir, as your present refuse collection calendar expires, you may be wondering when to put your bin out, as from December, and why the new calendar hasn't dropped through your letterbox. I did too, and rang the Working Together customer services. They helpfully have a recorded message telling you that they are not delivering the calendar this year and urge you to download it and print it out. This I duly did, and it is a new fetching colour scheme. I studied Christmas week and was amazed to see that in my area the grey bins are due for collection on Boxing Day. Initially impressed that our privatised waste collection companies were keeping our hard-working refuse operators' noses to the festive grindstone, it later struck me that this might be a mistake even in 2013. A further call confirmed that this was likely and that the collection would probably be made on December 27th. Probably. Nothing definite, you understand. I urge readers to download your own copy and examine it carefully. Of course, if you are elderly, 64% of people over 65 have never accessed the interweb, you will just have to make inquiries when you wake up and notice it's not there, and see if a kindly neighbour will print one for you. The same applies if you are one of the 20% of the population who does not have access to the internet. I do wonder if the people responsible think they have done a good job. Dr. Gavin Bullock, London Road, Kingsworthy.
And this letter from Michael Fielding is headed, Turbines Could Be Even Taller. Sir, I was interested to read that those protesting against the Bullington Cross wind farm flew a balloon at 415 feet to show the height of the 14 wind turbines. I assume this means the height of the tower. Would it not be better to quote two heights, that of the tower itself, and another which includes the blades, which must add another 35%? And that is from Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And now it's time for your say. We asked, do you think pantomimes are outdated and a bit tacky, or a long-standing and revered tradition? Noel has the replies.
Right, four replies. Jay Sidon, hope I've pronounced that correctly, 25, Hobbs deputy manager from Badger Farm, said, I think it's a really good idea. As a retailer, anything that promotes footfall in the area and stimulates trade works for me. And Nicola Sales, 50, a volunteer for the City Museum of Locks Heath, said, done in the right way, they are fantastic fun and so good for the community. Computers are boring. It's much more fun to do it the old-fashioned way. And Maddie Ellis, 16, a Peter Simmons College student of Glenmore Road in Salisbury, said, I love pantos. I think it's very British, and with such a British sense of humour, if you took it somewhere else, like the States, they wouldn't get it. And Bill Roberts, 72, retired of Bitton Park, I think if they're traditional and without all the TV stuff, then they're good. I used to enjoy taking my children. I haven't yet taken my grandchildren, but I'm sure they would really like it.
And now it's time to go back through the years for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Shirley.
Right. 25 years ago, December 2nd, 1988. And it's headed, Council Homes in State of Disrepair. Winchester's council homes are in such a state of disrepair that it will cost almost £35 million to put them right. And this figure does not include the cost of inflation, general repair, maintenance or redecoration. The City's Housing Committee on Wednesday night recommended a rent rise of 13.6%, £3 a week, to help pay for a £7.2 million repair programme next year and to cope with proposed government changes to financial controls. The Council is planning to increase next year's budget by 60% if the government allows. The second subject. Human life in southern Sudan has become very cheap. A doctor from Winchester has just returned home from a country so ravaged by poverty, hunger and civil war that families sell their children for the sake of a few days' food. Dr. Judith Wilson has been working in Juba for the Church Missionary Society since January 1987. The man she witnessed selling his eldest child was just one of 200,000 who had been facing starvation for several weeks. One day that hunger became so acute that he sacrificed his own flesh and blood for the price of a few pumpkins. They would probably feed him and the rest of his family for a few days.
And now we're back to 50 years ago, read by Noel.
Yes, one item from December the 7th, 1963. Curfew bells, future in doubt. The curfew in Winchester may soon not toll the knell of parting day unless someone is found to take the job on for the annual payment of £26. For centuries, the curfew has sounded over the city at precisely 8 o'clock, rung each evening from the old Guildhall, now Lloyd's Bank. As the former custodian of St. Giles's Hill, it was recently the job of Mr. Bernard Smith to ring the bell. but now this post has been discontinued upon the implementation of the recent report by the Anne Shaw organisation. With the job also went Prospect Cottage, perched on the side of the hill, which was given to the council in 1890 by the Earl of Northbrook.
And 100 years ago, please, Jane.
And two small items from 100 years ago, December the 6th, 1913. 11-year-old at work at 10 p.m. Winchester City Bench, Employment of Children Act 1903, Herbert Sharer of Southgate Street was summoned for employing a child in a shop after 9 p.m. The head constable, Mr. J. Sim, deposed that at 10 o'clock on Saturday night he visited the shop of the Nottingham Hosiery Company, and he saw a boy, whom he afterwards ascertained to be William Gillett, aged 11, employed there. On telling defendant an offence was being committed, he replied, "I did not know that. I think you may have told me." The defendant stated that the boy had applied to him in the first instance to know if he might earn a penny or two by cleaning the shop window. And secondly, on Thursday afternoon, a carpenter named William Collins of St. Faith's Road, St. Cross, met with a nasty accident through falling off some scaffolding at the new picture theatre being erected in the High Street. At the time, some roof joists were being placed in position, and he lost his hold during head-over-reaching through his foot slipping. He fell to the basement about 22 feet down, and although seriously cut about the head, was happily discovered that these injuries were not dangerous. Collins was conveyed to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and detained for treatment. No bones were broken.
And it's back to Shirley for 200 years ago.
Yes, that's December the 6th, 1813. And it's headed, £1,500 stolen from coach. The Chelmsford coach was robbed on Wednesday night in the morning of a parcel directed to Messrs. Esdales from the bank of Cricket, Russell and Co. of Chelmsford. Its contents amounted to £1,500, chiefly notes of the Bank of England. The robbery, it is suspected, was effected by a person who had taken his place in the coach for Romsford and had paid his fare. But soon after he had been seated, he appeared to alter his mind, and taking from the seat the small parcel, which by the passengers was supposed to be his own, and which he concealed in his handkerchief, he got out of the coach and received back the half of his fare. Secondly, the Dutch counter-revolution, it appears, was planned whilst the French were still in considerable force in Holland, and with so much secrecy and energy that the French commander, on receiving the first notice of it, placed himself under the protection of the old burgomaster, Elias, to ensure his personal safety. This man owed his preservation to the temperate manner in which he had exercised his authority. The greatest ardour has been manifested in Holland to raise an army for the public defence.
And it's back to the present, because it's time for First Person, read by Noel.
Yes, this is George Hayter, who writes, "My tortoise test for road rage reaction. An amusing plan to try driving around Winchester at 20 miles an hour had seemed a good idea when I was sitting at the computer. But now that I was behind the wheel and heading for the proposed 20-mile-an-hour city centre zone, I wasn't so sure. My family may find this hard to believe, but I don't enjoy annoying people. And I knew that by stubbornly driving at no more than 20, people in the inevitable queue behind could get quite cross. We all know that hooting, flashing and pointed overtaking are common reactions from impatient drivers when you hold them up. The City Council wants to introduce the new limit throughout the central area, including the main circular one-way system. That would force all traffic to grind along in third gear, even on straights like North Wall, St George's Street and Jury Street. The snail zone would stretch up to the railway station and would spread a tentacle along Hyde Street. I couldn't resist starting my experiment before I got to the start of the proposed zone. So I stuck to 20 all along Bar End Road. A queue built up instantly. I was too scared to look in the mirror, but I knew enough to feel pressure to accelerate. Bad Winchester drivers are a patient lot, or at least the ones behind me that Thursday at 10:30 a.m. were, and they soon fell back. Left at the mini roundabout and over the Itchen on the 200-year-old Hump Bridge, and then right behind King Alfred's statue for Eastgate Street, and never over 20, and most of the time a lot below. Despite that, the queue behind me had evaporated. Hugging 20 wasn't making me stand out after all. Friar's Gate is the part of the gyratory system that goes past Beale's and the converted cinema. There my 20 limit was academic, because the traffic had slowed to 5 mph. It was much the same through the Chronicle chicane, but after McDonald's the cars in front sped away. Their spurt was to no effect, though, because I caught up with them at the traffic lights. Cars in front of me went over 20 up the high street, past the man on the horse, and up to the Westgate. But with mothers pushing prams on the narrow pavement, I was happy to spare the horses, and again I caught up with them, this time outside the county council. It seemed that there was no point going over 20. All that going fast did for the other drivers was to speed them on to the next queue. I kept left and started the long climb up Romsey Road towards the hospital. Here, the proposed speed limit finishes after a few yards, but I found myself still going at 20. I'd got used to it. It's a friendly speed in a town, and you seem to get there just as quickly.
And Jane's got editorial comment for us.
And the editorial comment today is "Last Chance to Make a Child's Christmas." With just a few days to go before the Chronicle's Giving Tree appeal closes, we're urging readers to go on one last shopping spree to help a needy youngster this Christmas. As our latest report into the fantastic work that the Legion of Volunteers do at Winchester's Basics Bank, it was poignant to hear the thoughts of one of them. Isabel Dymott, who has volunteered there for 2.5 years, spoke of the huge disappointment many children would face waking up on Christmas Day with no presents. If children receive even one nice gift from Santa, it could make a lot of difference to their Christmas, she said. Basics Bank volunteers know more than most about the plight of hundreds of children in the Winchester area who have little to look forward to on Christmas Day. Through experience, they say there is a bigger group of have-nots in Winchester than many people would believe. Thankfully, our generous readers are pulling out the stops to put a smile on the face of a child this Christmas Day.
Now we'll continue with items of general news, beginning with one read by Shirley.
And this one is headed, "Campaigner Calls for City Bike Hub." A Winchester cycling campaigner has called for a bike hub in the city centre. Heather Evans, who set up social enterprise Bespoke Biking last year, said it would promote two wheels instead of four. A place where people hire bikes, recycle bikes for the benefit of the community, a club where people can meet, from where rides can start and rides can finish, she told the town's forum last Wednesday. Miss Evans, who lives in Hyde, organises cycle training for the young and old and is currently working with King's School. Steve Tilbury, City Council Corporate Director, said, "It is a really exciting idea for the kind of place we want to create. What it needs is someone within Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council to work with someone from outside with enthusiasm, like Heather's, to help deliver a strategy." Miss Evans said the bikeabout scheme, where people borrow bikes, appeared to be moribund. Councillor Martin Todd said bikeabout dated from 2002, and the City Council needed to check what the current best practice was for cycle schemes. Miss Evans said her rides gave clear health benefits. "I have one client who is 70 who has been able to reduce her medication. She is diabetic. She's dead chuffed. She's not dead, she's chuffed, she told the laughing forum. Councillor Robert Hutchison, forum chairman, told her, I'm 105% enthusiastic about this. We will take this forward.
And this item is headlined, Advent Arrives in City of Lights, and it's about the lovely Winchester Lantern Parade. No street could have looked prettier as the people of Winchester waved their creations in the air during this year's Lantern Parade. The procession, which marked the start of Advent, began at the Great Hall before children and parents made their way down the High Street towards the cathedral's outer close. Hundreds of self-made, ornate lanterns, including traditional puddings, presents and a turkey, stretched as far as the eye could see as children clung on tightly to their works of art. Lanterns were made earlier in the year in preparation for this year's celebration theme, using willow and tissue paper at specialist workshops in the Brook Shopping Centre. For 10-year-old Maggie Caldwell and her 12-year-old brother Zach of Borough Road, it was all about the gifts. It's my first year doing it by myself, the Sparshall Primary School student said. I decided to do a present because I did one with my mum last year and it was easy. The festive event culminated in a family fun party, which featured Wave 105 DJ Simon Clark winding up the crowds and a special performance from the 1950s-style band The Cadillacs. Hundreds of proud onlookers lined the streets, including a local celebrity who stood quietly by with her husband. Judy Goodlett of Radio Solent fame said, "It's amazing how many people are here, and The Cadillacs were fabulous. It's great to hear that sort of music through the streets of Winchester." The daring lantern, shaped as a popping champagne bottle, caught many an eye, which the creators said they were very pleased with. Liz Baldwin, 36, of Test Road, Whitchurch, came up with the unique design, along with her social group, the Winchester Circle of Friends.
And this item is, it's time to bow out for Lord Lieutenant, Dame Mary to retire after 20 years of service. She has welcomed royals, attended countless engagements, and must have shaken more hands than anyone else in Hampshire. But after 20 years of tireless service, Hampshire's Lord Lieutenant Dame Mary Fagan is set to retire. For 2 decades, Dame Mary has so often been the first person to greet high-profile dignitaries visiting the county. The Queen, Prince Charles and Princess Anne are among the royals she has given a warm welcome to over the years. She will retire on her 75th birthday in September next year. As the Queen's representative in Hampshire since 1994 and as patron or president to more than 60 organisations, Dame Mary is a familiar sight at engagements. Winchester and Chandlersford MP Steve Brine was most recently with Dame Mary at the laying of the wreaths on Remembrance Sunday. He said, "Hers will be one extraordinary pair of shoes to fill. I've been very fortunate to know her over many years, and aside from her exhausting work rate, which would stretch those many years her junior, she has that priceless ability to connect with everyone she meets and put them at complete ease. She'll be a big loss for Hampshire." Dame Mary's duties include organising royal visits to Hampshire, and she often attends engagements with her husband, Captain Christopher Fagan. A spokesman at her office confirmed she is to step down but did not wish to comment further. Her successor has not yet been chosen, but the government's cabinet office will begin consulting people in Hampshire to find a replacement. The post of Lord Lieutenant was created by Henry VIII in the 1540s. They were to be his officers in their respective counties, raising local militia units on behalf of the king. Dame Mary is also Chancellor of the University of Winchester, and sources say she will step down from that role in 2015. And it lists Her Majesty's representative's jobs. The Lord Lieutenant is Her Majesty's representative in the county, responsible for arranging and attending royal visits in the county. In 1871, the militia was removed from the Lord Lieutenant's direct control, and this was followed in 1921 by the loss of power to call men of the county to arms. Today, the traditional links with the military have been preserved in the association of the Lord Lieutenant with the Territorial Army and other reserve forces, together with a wide spectrum of voluntary organisation. Appointed by Her Majesty the Queen on the recommendation of the Prime Minister, Lord Lieutenants may remain in the office until the age of 75. And the item is accompanied by three photographs of the Lord Lieutenant Dame Mary Fagan, one greeting Prince Edward at Winchester University to officially open the new building earlier this year, another with the Queen and Prince Philip in Romsey, and a third showing her with Princess Michael of Kent at the Welcome Home Parade in Winchester.
And this one is headed County Complacent Over Fracking Risks. Lib Dems have attacked a complacent County Council report on fracking. At a meeting, the council considered the impact of controversial drilling for shale gas. Councillor Martin Todd said it would be wrong to accept a report which said Hampshire had sufficient regulations in place to protect it from the risks of fracking. He said the document compared the amount of water used in a fracking well to that used by a golf course, but that the figure used refers to a Florida golf course over 1 year. In Hampshire, he said, the amount of water required had been grossly underestimated. At a full council meeting in Winchester last Thursday, he said, the report is complacent about the use of water. Residents are being told to use water meters. Our two main rivers are vulnerable. We would be wrong to accept the committee recommendations. Councillor Mel Kendall supported the report's recommendations, but criticised some of the rhetoric surrounding the debate. In the case of fracking, the first casualty has been the truth. I do not think you can overestimate the economic benefits that would come to Hampshire with gas exploration. The economic benefits will create a boom. Gas is good. I agree, though, that water is a problem, he said. Fracking, or hydraulic fracturing, involves drilling thousands of feet underground and then pumping in pressurized water and chemicals to crack the rocks below and release trapped pockets of gas. Concerns have been raised, including pollution of groundwater, chemical spills, methane emissions, and small earthquakes. The Environment Agency would monitor water quality, methane escape, and seismic activity, and has the power to shut down wells if problems develop. Licenses for exploratory drilling have already been granted in parts of Hampshire, including the north of Winchester, between Kingsworthy and Stockbridge. Despite Lib Dem opposition, the council voted overwhelmingly to support the recommendations.
Hampshire doctors urge at-risk groups to get themselves a flu jab. For many, it can be nothing more than an inconvenient illness, but for some in Hampshire, the flu can be a killer. But despite this, fewer people in the most at-risk groups are taking up the chance to protect themselves against the potentially fatal virus, despite being offered a free vaccine. Latest figures from the Wessex region show that just over 55% of over 65s have been vaccinated, while just 26% of pregnant women have had the jab. And despite this year, for the first time, free flu jabs being offered to 2- and 3-year-olds, just 28% of children aged 2 and only 25% of 3-year-olds have been vaccinated. Doctors across the region are urging people not to run the risk of getting the flu and to book their jab now before it's too late. Those at most risk, they are 11 times more likely to die from flu, include pregnant women, people living with a health condition such as severe asthma, chest or heart complaints, and those aged over 65 and over. Medics are warning that in recent years, critical care units across the region have been busy with people who should have been vaccinated against flu, but instead ended up so seriously ill over Christmas that they had to be ventilated as doctors battled to keep them alive. Most of these patients were young and middle-aged adults with long-term health conditions and pregnant women who should have been vaccinated. Consultant Claire Simpson of NHS England Wessex area team said, "For the majority of people, flu is an unpleasant illness, but it can be very serious and even life-threatening for older people and those at risk of developing complications."
Heavy lorries safety fear. Campaigners in the Somborne say a nearby industrial site is putting children at risk. Villagers of Up Somborne, Ashley and Little Somborne say that traffic from Redwood UK, which assembles agricultural machinery, is not suitable for the area's narrow roads. Last Friday, around 40 campaigners gathered to show their anger. One resident, Deanna Rays, who is retired and lives next to the site, said, "I had my arm in a cast and I was walking the dogs and a van clipped my plaster. I had to have it remade because it was cracked." Sarah Litton, 46, a full-time mother of Strawberry Lane, warned, "Until a child gets killed by a lorry, nothing will be done. I have a 9-year-old and I do fear for her safety." Farmer Grace Everett, 49, of Ashley Farm, denied it was a case of NIMBYism. "I completely agree there should be development in the countryside, but it has to be appropriate. This is not proportionate and it's changing the character of the village. People are changing their way of life because they no longer feel safe walking down the road. There have been so many near misses, but highways never record them," she said. The site at Forest Extra in Up Somborne is used to assemble and repair wood chipping machinery. But the buildings there were built for agricultural use and Redwood UK does not have planning permission for its business. A retrospective application to change the use of the buildings was received by Test Valley Borough Council from AJ and CT Browning, believed to be the owners, in 2012. But Sam Browning of Redwood UK declined to comment and would not confirm the names of the owners. A council highways report said the roads are not suitable for the kind of traffic coming to and from Redwood UK and suggested 40-foot tarmac lay-bys for passing places. A petition has been sent to both Hampshire County Council and Test Valley Borough Council with 211 people, around 95% of the three hamlets. The application will go before planning chiefs in Romsey next Tuesday, December the 10th. And this is accompanied by a photograph of villagers from the Somborns who are angry about the business. And they're all holding up petitions on a crowded corner with an enormous lorry struggling to get past them.
And this one is headed, "Intrepid pair take to high seas for gruelling challenge." A Winchester man set off this week on one of the most gruelling challenges possible. Will North, 28, a former Peter Simmons student, is rowing the Atlantic Ocean with his friend Dan Howie, also 28. The pair met at university and have been preparing for the adventure in the Canary Islands. On Monday, they started the 3,000-mile race from English Harbour in Antigua as part of the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge. Mr. North, a recruitment consultant now based in London, said, "We've undergone 2 years of hard training and planning for the greatest challenge of our lives. The rowers will have to cope with blisters, salt rashes, sea deprivation, and rowing in 2-hour shifts around the clock for weeks on end. The boats are 7 metres long and just under 2 metres wide, with only a small cabin for protection against storms. They're also aiming to raise £200,000 for leukemia and lymphoma research. The friends are particularly well motivated, though, as in 2006, Will's father was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and in 2009, Dan's father was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Then, in 2011, Dan's friend, Gareth Crockett, died suddenly during a challenge to raise money in memory of a friend who he had lost to leukemia. The team have already raised around £80,000 and hope to sell their boat at the end to add to their total. They aim to arrive back in Antigua within 50 days. And accompanying the article, we have a very nice picture in colour of these two well-muscled young men, and also a picture of their boat.
Here's a dramatic story from Alsford, headlined, Town Councillors Urged to Resign. Senior Alsford Town Councillor should resign following a critical auditor's report, a public meeting heard. Former councillor Robin Atkins made the demand after he said accountants BDO backed his criticisms of town council procedures in their annual audit. He has been in dispute with the council after it was revealed that money had allegedly gone missing from gaming machines installed at the council-run Alsford Recreation Centre in 2011 and 2012. Mr. Atkins told the council last Thursday, "The council have failed to control public money. The principal officer, Stevie Kavanagh, has failed in her role. She should be suspended." He also said senior councillor Lisa Griffiths, Roy Gentry and Margot Power should resign. Councillor Natalie Carpenter, who supports Mr. Atkinson's stand, said in a statement she read to the council, "After investigation, BDO has indeed found several serious matters which the council has yet to answer. In light of this, I am still concerned where monies have gone that are unaccounted for since the installation of the machines. Obviously, there are a great many more things rotten in the state of Alsford, but I will address these at another time." Mr. Atkins said he would be reporting the matter to the police and called for the City Council to take over the running of the Town Council. He also said he would be reluctantly standing for Labour at the next City Council elections. Councillors did not respond to the criticisms, but unanimously passed a resolution for the clerk to investigate the implementation of a vexatious and habitual complaint procedure due to Mr. Atkins and others making pernicious and unsubstantiated accusation against town councillors and staff. Council Chairman Lisa Griffiths said in a statement, "The external auditor, BDO, have issued their interim report into the last accounting year without taking up the invitation to review documentation and records at the office. And also, I would welcome police investigation as we do not believe the council has been involved in the alleged fraud." She later added, "There are procedures that were not correct and these have been put in place. Mistakes are made and we need to tighten things up." Mrs. Griffiths disputed the frequently quoted figure of £35,000 missing money, saying so far this year the machines had taken around £4,000. The council will be writing to BDO requesting they visit council offices to inspect the books.
And this one is headed, Celebrities Sign Up for Charity Christmas Concert. Winchester College Chapel will host a Christmas concert later this month to raise money for cancer support centres. Tickets are reported to be selling fast for the charity concert on Thursday, December the 19th from 6:30 p.m. The event will support the Capital Appeal to raise £2.5 million to open The Haven in Wessex, a specialist support centre for anyone affected by breast cancer. The musical arrangement will be by Richard Brett, with song performances from former St Swithin's School choristers and rock choir. In addition, there will be readings by actor and comedian Hugh Dennis, actress Sarah Parrish, and other high-profile celebrity friends and supporters of the Haven charity. Tickets are £35 each and include hot canapés and a glass of champagne. Sally Taylor, BBC South Today news anchor and chair of the Haven in Wessex fundraising committee, said, "This is our first Christmas concert and we are working very hard to make sure it is so special it becomes an annual must-attend event. With centres currently in Leeds, Hereford and London, The Haven is the UK's only charity that offers completely free of charge, bespoke, one-to-one support to improve the quality of life of anyone affected by breast cancer.
This one is headed, Village Shops Share Their Ideas for Success. The third Village Shop Conference was well attended by shop owners, leaseholders, managers and volunteers. The conference, held in Preston Candover Village Hall near Alresford, was hosted by Hampshire County Council to provide support and advice for people who run village shops in Hampshire. Councillor Andrew Gibson, the County Council's Assistant Member for Business and Rural Economy, welcomed 24 delegates to the event. Councillor Gibson also presented a grant cheque for £9,600 to East Stratton Village Shop, opened in a disused garage at the Northbrook Arms, East Stratton, near Mitchelduer. The keynote speaker was Ken Parsons from the Rural Shops Alliance, who gave suggestions for improving the viability of rural shops. Other topics discussed were using the internet and social media to increase market reach, reducing energy costs, the post office modernisation programme, sourcing local food, Hampshire Fair, and networking with other shops. The closure rate of village shops has slowed in recent years, mainly because most are now run by more dynamic people. Councillor Gibson said, village shops are often a lifeline for the vulnerable and can play an integral part in the vitality and vibrancy of a community. We have been working with village shops in Hampshire to help increase footfall and ensure sustainability through the Hampshire Village Shops Grant Scheme. The conference brought together people who are running village shops around the county so they could share their experiences and ideas on how to improve the use of their stores. The Village Shops Grant Scheme offers grants to help increase the use of village shops or to create new community-led village stores. Some 30 grants have been awarded to villages in Hampshire since the scheme was launched in 2008. The Hampshire Village Shops Grant Scheme is targeted primarily at villages with fewer than 5,000 residents, which either have no shop or just one shop in their community.
And I've got another dramatic story, this time from Pilgrim School in Winchester. It's headlined, Head Departs Due to Irreconcilable Differences. The head of a top prep school has left suddenly due to a breakdown with his board of governors, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. Paddy Watson had been in charge at the Pilgrim School in Winchester since September 2011, but has now left with immediate effect. Deputy head Geoffrey Hammond will take temporary charge. In a letter to parents, the Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell, who is the chairman of the governors, said, due to irreconcilable differences, the governors and the headmaster have decided to part company. Mr. Watson will cease to run the school immediately. I'm sure you will understand that it is essential that I make it plain that there has been no impropriety on Paddy Watson's part, and the governors recognise that Paddy has, in his brief tenure, improved many aspects of the service Pilgrims provides for the boys and their parents. The governors thank Paddy and Sarah for all they have done over these past seven terms and wish them well for the future. The letter did not explain what had caused the relationship breakdown. The school with 200 boys aged 4 to 13 is owned by the Dean and Chapter of Winchester Cathedral and every year sends boys on to public schools such as Winchester College, Eton and Harrow. Fees are £6,730 a term for boarders and £5,330 for day boys. Mr. Watson, a father of two grown-up children and reported to own two Harley-Davidson motorbikes, was previously head of Formark Hall, Repton Preparatory School. One parent, who asked not to be named, said he was a slightly controversial appointment. I don't think he was a strong enough leader. But it is difficult political role between the cathedral and Winchester College. Following Dr. Brian Rees was a hard act. Expectations were high, but recently I think people had warmed to him. The difficulty Pilgrims is going to have now is that they have got to get the next appointment absolutely bang on. Otherwise, its reputation will go.
And another dramatic story. Pregnant woman cut from pile-up thanks firefighters. New mum takes baby Grace to meet her rescuers. It was the terrifying moment when a heavily pregnant mum-to-be feared for the safety of her unborn baby. But thanks to Hampshire firefighters, Emma Sayer's moment of terror turned into one of great joy. Emma had to be cut from her car after a four-vehicle collision just off the M3 Junction 13, and her baby had to be induced the morning after. The 27-year-old from Eastleigh had been on her way to work in Fareham to say farewell to her colleagues before she went on maternity leave. Firefighters arrived on scene within a matter of minutes and extricated Emma, who was 38 weeks pregnant at the time with her first baby. Emma was then taken to hospital with light injuries, but because of complications following the crash, she had to be induced. Baby Grace was born on Tuesday, November the 12th, happy and healthy. Emma said, "Unfortunately, I never made it into work the day of the incident. Being heavily pregnant, I was terrified for the safety of my baby, and I remember begging all the people who attended the scene to get me to hospital as soon as possible. The fire crews who attended were fantastic. They chatted to me the whole time, which was really helping to keep me calm, especially when they started taking the roof off my car. I knew exactly what they were doing at all times and why. And when they lifted me out, completely horizontal, I might add, it was done so smoothly and carefully I didn't feel a thing. I can't thank the team enough for all they did for me that morning." And it's accompanied by a photograph of Mum M. Sayer with baby Grace, looking very healthy and a good size, meeting the firefighters who attended the car accident, which led her to be induced.
This one is headed Spate of Shed Break-ins. Police are appealing for witnesses after a spate of break-ins in Mitcheldever. Thieves raided 9 sheds in Mitcheldever overnight on Sunday, November 24th, in Winchester Road, Duke Street and Southbrook Cottages. Garden machinery and power tools were stolen. PC Graham Wren from Winchester Police Station said householders should secure expensive items like lawnmowers and bikes to an anchor point and to make sure garages and sheds have a good quality lock. They should also be security marked. Anyone with information should contact PC Wren at Winchester Police Station by calling 101.
Here's an inspiring story headed How Failure Can Be the Key to Success. St Swithin's School, Winchester, welcomed Dido Harding, Chief Executive of Talk Talk PLC, and ranked as one of the most powerful women in the UK by Radio 4's Women's Hour Power List. Her talk, entitled Striving for Success, explored the factors to which she attributes her success in business and on the racetrack, and was attended by pupils from St Swithin's and other local schools. They heard how Ms. Harding approached the 3 aims that she set herself on: to run a business, to ride round Aintree, and to own a dog. She stressed the importance of determination and remaining true to oneself. Indeed, she found herself leaving Tesco, which she loved, because at that time the Tesco idea of a female top executive was so far removed from her own character. The success of her horse, Cool Dawn, in the Cheltenham Gold Cup led to her believing dreams really can come true, though as a jockey she sometimes found herself underperforming in key races. She eventually understood that this was associated with her mental preparation, an important consideration worth bearing in mind by all members of the audience. Through a number of witty anecdotes, she identified the role of failure in developing resilience and in leading to better performance, a point often echoed by St Swithin's headmistress Jane Gandhi as part of the school's ethos. Miss Harding left the audience with her personal motto, which came from her grandfather. You can only be brave when you're afraid.
And here we have tea and cake, the order of the day. A community group in Winchester has marked its 10th anniversary in the way it knows best. Coffee Poppin' has been serving coffee and tea at St Mark's Church in Oliver's Battery every week for a decade, and celebrated the landmark with a huge cake and refreshments. The service was the brainchild of Pam Turner, Brenda and Dave Bartlett and Joyce Harfield, who have helped running it ever since. The Reverend Mike Gardner was on hand to cut the first slice as residents enjoyed the refreshments. Mrs. Bartlett, 75, of Battery Hill, said, "We have dedicated ourselves to serve fair trade coffee, tea and biscuits to all who enjoy the companionship it affords. It was very enjoyable and the cake was delicious and beautifully decorated." Coffee Poppin' is on Thursdays at 10:30 a.m. at St Mark's Church, Oliver's Battery. And it is accompanied by a picture of the Reverend Mike Gardner slicing into a delicious-looking orange drizzle cake in Oliver's Battery.
And this one is headed, "Classic Car Show Check for Hospice." It has become the biggest classic car show on the South Coast, and has clocked up several thousands of pounds for a children's hospice. The latest cheque, for just over £9,000, was handed over to Naomi House by organisers of Eastleigh's Concord Classic Show. It brings the total raised for the Sutton Scotney Hospice from the annual classic car event to £27,311. When he's not slaving over a hot stove, Hampshire-based celebrity chef James Martin has his foot on the gas with his fleet of classic sports cars. And TV's Saturday Kitchen star has become a regular at the car show, which is set in the Stoneham Lane grounds of the International Jazz Venue, mingling with the vast crowds which now attend the popular annual fundraiser for all the family. The Concorde is already revving up for next year's Car Classic, which will be on Sunday, September the 14th.
Ice and easy does it for a brace of mares. The Mayor of Winchester invited another member of the chain gang to enjoy the festive delights that Winchester has to offer. Councillor Ernie Jeffs has joined on the ice rink by counterpart Steve Gorris, Mayor of Hart District, for a spin. He said, "We invited him to have a look round the Christmas market this year to see how Winchester does Christmas. I fell over a few times and have a few bruises now. It's the first time I've done it in 30 years. He added, "We all work extremely hard, so it's nice to have a bit of light relief." And there's a lovely picture of the two mares looking hilariously precarious as they skate along on the ice.
And this one is Pupils' Own CD Kicks Off Christmas. Winchester schoolchildren have been getting into the Christmas spirit early this year by embarking on something a little different. Oliver's Battery primary pupils recorded their very first Christmas CD at a special assembly. A professional recording company helped them, giving each one an opportunity to sing on the record. The children recorded several of their favourite carols, as well as some more modern versions, including the lesser-known Rocking Around the Shops. Assisted by music teacher Jonathan Upfold, the children gathered in their main hall to give their special renditions to kick off the Yuletide festivities. And there's a photograph of them recording and looking very jolly as they sing their own favourite carols.
New homes a step nearer. 46 new homes could be built in Roman Road, Stockbridge. David Wilson Homes has submitted a screening opinion, a precursor to a planning application which scopes out whether an environmental impact assessment will be needed to planners at Test Valley Borough Council. The proposal is to build the estate on land adjacent to Test Valley County Secondary School, meaning that new school access and parking would also need to be created. Officers have recommended that the assessment is not required when the Borough Council's Northern Area Planning Committee meets to discuss it today. That was yesterday.
Santas take to the city streets. Santas will take to the streets of Winchester to sweat off their mince pies, all in the name of charity. The 5th Winchester Santa Fun Run is organised by Near Me House and invites everyone to sign up and fill the streets with red-suited, black-booted Christmas cheer. Participants are asked to arrive and register outside O'Neill's Pub in the High Street this Sunday, December the 8th at 9:30 a.m, where they'll be given a Santa suit. The run will be started by Winchester Mayor Councillor Ernie Jeffs at 10:30 a.m, but I don't think I'm going to be going.
That concludes the extract for this week. Apologies for the thumping and banging noises you may have heard in the background, but workmen will be erecting a scaffolding next door. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, to Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye for now. Thanks for listening. And we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet, together with the laminated card, when you've finished listening. Thank you, and goodbye again.